said, rearrange my family tree. A chicken is what I want to be.
Welcome, everybody, to Country Joe's Chicken Show here on All Paws Pet Talk Radio. I'm Karen Watts, also known as Karen at petoftheday.com. And we are here today with Joe, of course, Country Joe himself.
Yes, Country Joe is sitting right here. And we have who? We got Eric.
We have Eric
yep.
Lofgren from the Pampered Pullets. Welcome back to All Paws Pet Talk, Eric.
Thank you for having me back on, Joe and Karen.
Wow. God, we haven't heard from you for a long time here. And the last time I talked to you, you were writing another book, weren't you?
Yeah, and I'm still working on it. It's a work in progress.
Oh, my God. It must be a thick one.
Well, the first one took me 2 years. I figured this one ought to take me three.
So. Oh, God. Wow. So how's it coming? You almost through it or halfway through it? Where are you?
I'm a little better than halfway through it right now, but it's all on diseases, so that takes quite a while to do all the research on those. So,
well, that's what I was going to ask you, because I've got a book on chicken diseases, and it takes a veterinarian to explain it to me. Is this going to be easier for all of us regular folks to understand the way you're writing it?
Very much so. It's real common language and a little bit more in depth than you would find, but just in wording that all of us can understand, that's for sure.
Oh, good, good, good. Well, that's good. So
that's a good plan. You know, I wanted to talk to you. You guys are both in Florida, but I'm up here in right outside of Boston, Massachusetts, and it was 27 degrees. That's Fahrenheit, folks, last night. So I thought we might talk about how to prepare your birds for late fall and for winter.
Yeah.
Well, Karen, all I can say is move to Florida.
Oh, God. There you go, Karen.
Well, yeah, but, you know, the job, the house, the husband, and they're all here. And besides, I like snow, and you all don't get it.
Right. Yeah.
Oh. No, that's a good thing to be talking about, especially this time of year. A lot of preparations involved for the people who do live up north. I mean, Joe and I don't really worry about it a whole lot, do we, Joe?
No, not a bit. The only thing that I do is just turn on the lights to get that 14 hours of light so we can keep the eggs going.
This is the first year I'm not doing that. I'm going to give my girls a rest this year, so they're very happy about that. but I know up north, you know, it gets so cold. I lived up in Washington for most of my life, so I know what it's like up there. But to have that cold weather, you know, the folks that live up there need to be preparing for their birds to go through the winter, or we're going to have some problems.
Yeah, I remember. I come from Vermont a long time ago, and that was the same up there. You know, the water freezing and insulating the chicken coops up a little bit. I remember all of that too, preparing for all of that. That's quite a deal. But
well, what temperature can, you know, when does it start to get dangerous for chickens? I know they can, some breeds are better than others at taking some cold weather. But how cold does it have to get before you're running into trouble?
Well, like you said, Karen, it depends on the breed. Most people who live up in the north, you know, if you have breeds that will handle the cold with the smaller combs and wattles, that's where you run into a lot of problem with frostbite up there is the birds with the big combs, like the big Rhode Island Reds and the big Leghorns and breeds like that, that their combs and wattles will freeze. They get actual frostbite, and so you want a bird first that's going to have a smaller comb, a smaller wattle, heavier feathering. Then you don't run nearly as much problem with the birds that you would with the lighter feathered birds.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
Now, do you have to worry about breezes in a coop? I know circulation of air is a good thing, but in the winter, if you have a leaky, you know, if you have a lot of cold air coming in, drafts, are chickens as susceptible to that as some birds are?
Very much so. I mean, that's the biggest problem is if you want ventilation, But you don't want to have drafts on your birds. It's the drafts that will actually kill your birds quicker than anything else. And so you want to make sure that, you know, all the air, like coming in from the bottom or in through walls or doors, that you want to seal that off so you don't have those drafts, because that's going to be your biggest problem with your birds getting cold. Because a bird at 6 weeks of age, a standard bred bird at 6 weeks of age can handle temperatures drops down to 32 or below without any problem, as long as there's no drafts. A bigger bird, a full-grown bird that's about a year old or so, that's got some weight to it and full feathering, they can easily handle zero or below for extended periods of time. I know lots of people that I deal with that live in Alaska, even, that do not run any type of artificial heat in their coops, and their birds do just fine all winter long.
Wow, that's amazing. But I know water was the big problem up our way. I mean, the water keeps freezing and freezing, and I had, you know, trying to keep that thawed out. That was my biggest problem.
Oh, sure. Yeah, I mean, even here in Florida, I mean, I don't know how your water setup is, Joe, but I mean, I have my water freeze here from time to time because it gets cold enough here in Florida. Mm-hmm. You know, so up north where it's, you know, you're constantly cold, you know, you either run, if you're running like automatic waterers, you have to have heat tapes on your water lines, or if you're running just like metal fonts, mm-hmm. you can use the warmer plates under them to keep them warm and keep them from freezing, because those chickens, they've got to have water constantly. You never want
yes.
them to run out of water. So
that's true.
Now, I know one of my friends who lives in the Yukon, when it gets really cold by her standards, not by yours. I know my 27 degrees was really cold by your standards, but yeah. you know, that's just normal for us. She would put like beef stock in her dog's water to make sure they got enough water. Is there anything you can do with chickens to make sure they drink enough before the water freezes? Is there anything you can put in the water?
Well, a lot of people will actually give them warm water. The, you know, the, if they're home enough, you know, and they're not working yeah. all day long, you can put warm water in their waters and take it out to them. Mm-hmm. But you can also, if you want to entice them to drink, if you put a little bit of sugar or honey in their water, that makes it sweet enough that it actually entices them to drink more while they're drinking. And uh-huh. so you don't want to get them dehydrated. And just like humans can dehydrate real easy in the winter, so mm-hmm. can chickens and other animals, dogs, cats, as light, you know, as well. So.
But they also sell those waters with the heated bottoms, you know, where you plug them in. Now, I had one of those, and that seemed to work for the most part, except for when it got really below zero, it didn't work. And but those on really seem to do the job most of the time. But, you know, down here, obviously, we don't need it. But is there any other diseases they can get from being in the cold or catching cold, Eric, that you
well,
know of?
Well, the main problem that you're going to have is frostbite.
Yeah.
And,
you know, guys, I'm going to stop you right there. Can I do this to him? But I know that's going to be more than 10 seconds worth of answers. So, folks, we will be right back with more Country Joe's Chicken Show here on All Paws Pet Talk Radio.
I'm a great chicken.
When it comes to health expenses, dog owners have it rough. Now, thanks to veterinarian and dermatologist Dr. Kristen Holm, your dog can be goo healthy. There's Doggy Goo to fight environmental pet allergies, Goo Gut Rescue for rescuing your dog's gut health, and Goo Silver, a broad-spectrum supplement for the special needs of your senior varsity dog. So visit HealthyGoo.com today or call 855-246-2426, and your dog can be healthy goo healthy.
NuVet Plus, your pet's best friend. NuVet Plus is an immune system builder that is safe for all stages of your dog's life. Helps eliminate most issues, including allergies, scratching and itching, hot spots, arthritis and joint issues, chronic ear infections, tear staining, lack of energy, digestive issues, and so much more. all natural, manufactured in an FDA registered human pharmaceutical lab here in the USA, using ingredients sourced in the USA. Nothing artificial, no sugars, wheat, corn, or dyes. Never heat treated to help retain all the natural rich ingredients. Comes with a 60-day money-back guarantee and is only pennies a day. Call us Monday through Friday, 7 a.m. to 5 p.m. Pacific Time. 1-800-474-7044. That's 1-800-474-7044. And tell them you are referred by All Paws Pet Talk Radio. Or go online to www.nuvet.com. That's www.nuvet.com. Use order code 33955. Again, www.nuvet.com. Order code 3395. Put your pet on the path to good health.
Does your dog have muddy, dirty paws? Well, here's your answer. The Paw Wash cleans dog's paws fast and easy. Just insert your dog's paw and leg into the device and pump up and down. The Paw Wash's unique hourglass design creates a suction of power that pulls that dirt, mud, sand, or salt off the paw and leg, and it stays in the device. You can clean all four paws in a little over a minute with just one fill. For retail or online sales, go to www.thepawwash.com. That's www.thepawwash.com.
Rearrange my family tree. A chicken is what I want to be.
Well, as the song says, I'm a great chicken, but is it a cold chicken? Now, we have Eric Lofgren with us. And Jack was just asking, before I so rudely interrupted him, about any diseases you need to worry about in cold weather besides birds getting dehydrated like all of us do when it gets cold.
Well, like I started to say, your biggest problem is going to be frostbite with the chickens. And if your coops are properly sealed up for winter and even insulated, if you have that possibility, you can, to help avoid frostbite, if you've got bigger comb and wattled birds, you can smear their combs and wattles with Vaseline before nightfall, and that'll help keep them from getting frostbite, and it'll also help hold in body heat. You want to make sure you got good roosts where they can actually sit flat on their feet to keep their feet from getting frostbitten. But other than that, during the winter, you want to watch for respiratory ailments, especially with if we get a lot of rain. Followed by a real cold snap. If you go into your coops at night, you can listen to your birds. You'll hear them wheezing, possibly, or sneezing. That's your first signs of that you've got a respiratory ailment, and you want to seek some type of remedy for that.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's good. Yeah, that's good to know. Gosh,
and man, you know, it never occurred to me that putting Vaseline on their combs would help with that. You know, that's what people skiing, you know, put their chapstick on and put protective clothing on. But and I guess that works for roosters with big combs too.
Boy, yeah, that'd be fun chasing them around the coop with a jar of Vaseline. Oh, boy, it's like the grease pig thing.
But their combs and wattles act like radiators for their body, and during the summer it helps cool them. During the winter it can help keep them warm. But that's just like we lose most of our body heat out of our heads. So does a chicken. And by smearing Vaseline on their combs and wattles, that helps hold in that heat. You know, so it just provides an extra layer of protection, and it also moisturizes their combs and wattles. So you have a lot less likelihood of getting frostbite from them.
Mm-hmm. Now, is that all going to be in your new book on diseases and everything?
That'll be actually in the new book, and it'll also be on my website. I'll have it all posted here shortly on my website for all the winter stuff. I'm just getting through doing a lot of updating on it. So if folks want to go check out the website, it is thepamperedpulletsfarm.com. That's thepamperedpulletsfarm.com. And I'll have all sorts of new information on there dealing with a lot of the winter problems that we come up with all over the nation. So, and it's
and are there,
I got a
are
little
there
bit
more?
Of it in the first book I've done. I did a generalized section on wintering over birds. And anybody that's interested in the book, it's called Talking Chickenese. It's a logical guide to raising chickens. It's available directly through me here at the farm. You can call me at area code 352-861-1491, or you can email me at thepamperedpullet@yahoo.com, and I can give you more information about the book.
Oh, that sounds great. Okay.
Now, I'm going to break in here because this is a good point to do this. We have a very special giveaway this week on the show. Eric was talking about his book. Well, we were talking with author Jan Brett, and she is a children's book author, and she has a new book coming out, Cinders, the Cinderella Chicken.
Wow. So,
that sounds like a good one.
Yeah.
It is. So any of our listeners who are listening to this show right now, you can send me an email, Karen@petoftheday.com. You hear me talk about Pet of the Day all the time. And Karen@petoftheday.com, and put your name and mention Cinders, because that's the name of the book, Cinders, the Cinderella Chicken. And we will do a drawing and to see which of our lucky listeners gets a copy of the book, and they'll get it the same day it arrives in bookstores, so before anybody else.
Wow, that's great.
Cool.
Yeah. Boy, I can't wait. That sounds fun. You'll have to look that one up. So that's Jan Brett. Wow. That's
pretty good. And she's a chicken breeder. Now, you breed chickens too, Eric, don't you?
Yeah, I breed mostly production birds. Right now, I've scaled back for the winter, our winter. But generally, I raise the big heavy breeds, the Rhode Island Reds, Barred Rocks, Delawares. I do the different sexling chickens, and then I've got little Saramas that I breed here and there. So I've scaled back from my 28 different breeds down to about 5. So
yeah, I still got
a little more manageable around here.
Yeah, I'm going to have to get another pair of Saramas from you. Those are really excellent. I love those. So
what do they look like for those for our radio listeners who've never seen one?
Well, the Sarama is known as the world's smallest breed of chicken. There is no standard size that matches it, so it is a true bantam breed. They're known for their big upright stance. They stand almost in a U shape, and their chest is way out. Their wingtips just about drag the ground. Their tails will come up right beside behind the back of their head. And what's fun about Saramas is the more you handle them, the more they want to be handled. So they're a great pet chicken for people.
And they come in 3 different classes, right? You know, we've got to talk about that, Eric. You know, the little miniature ones.
They're done in class sizes. They start with a class A, which is, they start with a micro, which are really, really difficult to find because they're so hard to breed. And then they go to class A, class B, class C, and then a class D. A class D is generally too big for a Sarama, and so you don't see a whole lot of those, even though I do have a rooster that's a class D. But most people want a class A or class B chicken.
And how much would a class A weigh?
They run about 9 ounces, so they're a real small chicken.
About the size of a pigeon, almost, right?
Yeah, actually, depending on the breed of pigeon, some breeds are even smaller than the standard pigeon. So,
wow! Now the micros, I've never seen a micro. You've got micros, or have you ever had?
I have only had one micro, and I actually just lost her.
Oh!
So unfortunately, she was a cute little Millie Fleur colored micro, and she only weighed 4.5 ounces at 4 months old.
That's wow.
Goodness, that's almost canary size.
I guess.
You know, gentlemen, I'm gonna do what Joe hates. It is time for the end of this segment. And you know, I want everybody for Eric's website, it is the Pampered Pullets, B because, of course, he has more than one chicken. We all know that. The Pampered Pullets Farm.com. Is that right, Eric?
That's correct.
All right. And you've been listening to All Paws Pet Talk Radio, Country Joe's Chicken Show. We'll be right back with more.
As a dog owner, you know that dogs can eat just about anything. But when food becomes a health troublemaker, or your animal has been on antibiotics or heavy meds, or GI issues set in, your animal's gut may be out of balance and needs Goo Gut Rescue. Goo Gut Rescue is 100% natural and veterinarian prebiotic and probiotic formulated to rescue your animal's gut from bad bug dominance. Remember, your dog's total health begins with gut health. Don't delay. Visit GooGutRescue.com.
Our dogs are part of our family, an integral part of our lives, providing comfort, exercise, and companionship. All too often, however, this relationship is tested through dog naughtiness and general poor behavior. Our dog does not come when called, digs the garden, and many other issues that create frustration and a break in the relationship we seek. You love him, but you don't like him. Today's e-callers remote trainers have been developed to help you train your dog and overcome these issues that can result in separation from the family and worse. E-collar technology has been developed to help the everyday dog owner. Collars that set limit on the levels of stimulation and therefore limiting mistakes. If you seek a training aid that will assist you overcome the unwanted issues, e-collar technology products have developed dog training technology for the modern world that uses the lowest levels of distractive stimulus to improve behavior and reduce stress. www.ecollar.com. That's www.ecollar.com.
She said, rearrange my family tree. A chicken is what I want to be.
Welcome back to Country Joe's Chicken Show here on All Paws Pet Talk Radio. Now, Joe, we have what next with us. Our guest is Kermit Blackwood, who wrote a fascinating article on the Rapa Nui chickens, or the chickens of Easter Island. Welcome to Country Joe's Chicken Show, Kermit.
Yeah.
Well, hi. Well, thank you for having me.
Yeah, I never heard of these chickens. Boy, I want to hear all about them. I read the article and everything, but until that, I thought I knew everything about rare chickens or unusual chickens and never knew about this breed. And
isn't
so,
it something?
Yeah. So how did you come across these?
I had never heard of them either.
Uh-huh. Did you go there or something or find them? Or how
no,
did you...
not at all. Actually, I lived not very far from Marysville. I went to a boarding school in Applegate, California, which is kind of near Auburn. You know where that is?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And I was, you know, quite young. I was 14 or so. And I was I worked for a Japanese gentleman who had a really rare collection of fish, koi, and chickens, and Japanese maples, and pheasants, and things. And I worked for him. And he had all these really strange, he collected really, really strange things. And he had a whole cadre of buddies who were also Japanese. And there's one Dutchman, and they collected a lot of, they were really wonderfully odd old men.
Well,
I inherited them. I didn't necessarily want them.
Yeah, I was looking at these chickens, and boy, they're strange looking. I was looking at the one that looks just like a crow.
They're really weird.
Yeah.
And it's frustrating because they, you know, like we Westerners have this concept of a breed, and that's come about just in the last, you know, couple hundred years. I mean, none of these domestic chickens really existed, you know, until very recently, most.
Yeah.
And when the seafarers were leaving these islands and in you know, from Indonesia across the ocean to Oceania, that was, you know, several thousand years ago, and they didn't bring domesticated chickens with them. They brought birds that were slightly domesticated with them, and they left birds and pigs and things on islands so that they could collect them later.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of the strange jungle fowl that were actually hybrid were released, and I'm sure they released a lot of things, but the only things that survived in many situations were descendants of these hybrids. And
And so then, you know, they were weird little island semi-species, and they were carried from island to island. And that's fascinating in itself, because natural selection on these feral creatures with very small gene pools results in some very interesting creatures, like the crow-looking thing.
Yeah.
They're very, very odd.
Yeah, you see a chicken with black feet and a black face, and wow, yeah. I thought it was a crow when I first looked. I had to look twice, you know. Are there many of those in the U.S. now?
Not very many. I've had them for a long time, and the Japanese are Japanese poulters and aviculturists, and people, they seem to just really interact with each other, with one another.
Mm-hmm.
They're not really involved with anything else. And I don't know how many there are in the Japanese community, but as far as I know, there's probably only maybe 50 or 100 of most of the breed, and I think altogether maybe 300 or 400 altogether in the United States.
So now on the Easter Island, are they still there? Are they still on the Easter Island?
No, they're gone.
They're gone.
They've been gone for a very long time. I think the last of them went with the Dutch. And I think, really, I think a lot of the Arikana breeders will not like me for this, but I think that it's very possible that the blue egg-laying chicken may have arrived in South America with the last of the Rapa Nui people as they were brought to South America as slaves. And I think that may be when some chickens were brought for the first time to South America. But I think when you look at some of the South American breeds, you'll find quite a lot in common. But also, almost all of the weird little bantams that we think of as being so, you know, uniquely European,
right?
Like the quail bantam, those are nothing but basket bantams from the Spice Islands and you know, around the Pacific and the Chilean.
Hmm.
Now, I know Easter Island has its own fascinating ecological history in that it used to be a very wooded place, and it basically was a disaster, and the chickens survived.
Yeah. And it's an interesting thing, too, because it's very likely that there were people who arrived on Easter Island many, many hundreds of years before there was permanent settlement. And this is a strange little bit of trivia, but it's kind of funny and odd. But are you familiar with King Kamehameha in Hawaii?
Yes, in Hawaii.
Can you imagine the huge helmet that he wore and the feathers?
Uh-huh.
He was imitating a Bekazo, the hybrid chicken that between the green jungle fowl and a red jungle fowl.
Wow.
That crown on his head.
Right. Yeah. Whenever you see those pictures, he has those giant feathers.
Right, it's a silly thing on his head. Not silly, but such a culturally sensitive person to it. But no, the reason is that green jungle fowl, they are semi-estuarian adapted. So they wait for the tides to go out, and then they forage for starfish and little crabs and things that get stuck in the littoral pool. That's what green jungle fowl do.
Yeah.
And they can also fly really long distances. And I've actually seen them between the little islands in the lesser Sundas, like Komodo and Rinka. There's many, many little tiny rock islets between them. And you will see green jungle fowl flying out over the sea, a couple of hundred yards or maybe a half a mile over the sea, a flock of like sandpiper, like jungle fowl. They're really strange and wonderful creatures. But at any rate, hybridizing those with chickens results in a really unusual hybrid that's quite lovely to look at. But most importantly, like the green jungle fowl, it doesn't mind sitting on top of something on the sea. And its voice can be heard over the waves.
That's cool. You know, it never occurred to me that's why, you know, some chickens, some roosters would be so much louder than others.
Wow, exactly. That's interesting.
A bird that would be comfortable in a basket tied to the mast, you know, well out into the ocean because it's half domestic, it's kind of silly. It would be kind of like stupid, but, you know, a chicken. And because it's after Jungle Valley, it just is so happy that it owns the ocean and it has the best mangrove tree ever.
So yeah.
I think that, and this is a huge leap, but I've heard this from a few people now, that it may have been these decazars that helped them find where they were going.
Huh.
Because the bird could see other birds in the sky.
Oh, right.
Well before the human beings.
And you know, the bird's eye view and all. Yeah. We are running out of time for this segment, Kermit, but will you stick with us?
Yeah, we've got a lot of questions.
Sure. Sure.
Folks, we will be right back with more of Country Joe's Chicken Show here on All Paws Pet Talk Radio.
Attention all pet lovers. Do you love your furry pet? Well, I want to introduce to you Paws and Silk, the first all-natural silk-filled pet bedding and apparel line that helps improve your pet's overall health and wellness. Paws and Silk is made using luxurious long-stranded silk and all-natural breathable cotton. Each product will help keep your pet cool and comfortable all year long. Paws and Silk pet beds and coats will also work as a barrier against dust, mites, and other allergens. Not only are they fashionable, but they also don't take on your pet's odor. Better yet, they're even machine washable. So, folks, here's what I want you to do. Visit Paws and Silk website at pawsandsilk.com to learn more about Paws and Silk and their incredible products. That's pawsnsilk.com. You can buy directly from the site, and they even ship all over North America. How easy is that? For more information, go to pawsandsilk.com or call their toll-free number, 877-678-7455.
For your dogs, running beside your bike is more rewarding canine exercise than any walk. It's also more dangerous. Until now. Introducing the amazingly stable Bike Toe Leash, the only safe dog biking attachment approved by the American Pet Association. The Bike Toe Leash installs in seconds on bikes, trikes, power chairs, and mobility scooters. No tools needed, and dogs learn it immediately. With a Bike Toe Leash, both dogs and rider can enjoy fun recreation anywhere, no matter what your ability level. To learn more and order your Bike Toe Leash, visit BikeToeLeash.com. That's BikeToeLeash.com. Bike toe leashes are made in the USA and ship worldwide. That website again is BikeToeLeash.com.
She said, rearrange my family tree. A chicken is what I want to be.
Welcome back to Country Joe's Chicken Show. Now we've got with us Kermit Blackwood talking about the Rapa Nui chickens. And for those of us who aren't quite sure what Rapa Nui means, those are the chickens of Easter Island. And, you know, we've got him. He's on land now, back off the island. So hopefully you'll all be able to hear him better.
Yeah. Well, Kermit, how'd you get hooked up with Christine? How'd
Christine
that deal
Heinrich.
Come about? Yeah.
Gosh, I don't even remember. It's been so many years ago.
Oh, wow.
I have an animal nutrition company. And, gosh, I don't even know how I met her. That's embarrassing. But in any case, she was writing a book, and so I was one of her anonymous reviewers, and I helped her edit it. And then I have an animal nutrition company, and very early on, she was a promoter of my forage cakes before I had natural, you know, national distribution and all that stuff when I was just making them in my oven, even, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And so she helped promote them in her book, and so now she, you know, I owe her. So.
Wow, I guess so. I didn't know if she raised Rapa Nui chickens also, or
me?
It was just you. No, her. You know, she.
Oh,
she...
I don't know. I don't know if she raises them.
Uh-huh.
I'd love to send her some, but I think she's on the road a lot. She's a writer. I've read some of her articles. It seems like she's always on an adventure.
Now,
but
how many of these
kind of
chickens
person,
do you
Rapa
have?
Rapa Nui'd be the best chicken for you because they're. Mm-hmm. They're not particularly needy.
Now, how many of these chickens do you have personally, these Rapa Nui's?
Well, I've got a couple of different properties and then relationships with different farms. I'm very involved with sustainable agricultural, you know, initiatives and things, and I've passed them around as much as I possibly can.
Uh-huh.
But I think that altogether I probably have 20 or 30 of them.
Wow.
And then I gave... some really important birds to two different hatcheries that belong to religious you know, religious communities that are pretty common out here in, on the East. And because mm-hmm. so many people would call the different farms and ask for birds, not just Rapa Nui's, but other weird chickens that I collect or inherited these things. And I can't deal with that. You know, chicken people are really
uh-huh.
So I gave them to these hatcheries, and the hatcheries started actually selling eggs and things, whereas I've never sold chickens or birds at all. And mm-hmm. so these guys sell the eggs, and so people are very pleased with them. You know, there's a whole backyard chicken community. But I have to say that I've also been a little annoyed. I'm a little bit of a, I don't know if I could say that word, I can be a little testy when I'm writing, especially, and I'm back behind a deadline. But the ladies will get them, and, you know, they'll get some of the South American birds, and then they'll talk about them on the Internet, and then I have to hear about it later, and then it always comes down to, well, I think they might be mongrels. Like, oh, my God.
Isn't that amazing?
That's exactly what they are. That's exactly what they are. And that's mm-hmm. why you like them or not. I don't care. But
yeah. Uh-huh.
Well, you know, I tell people when they ask what my nationality is, I say I'm an American mutt.
Yeah.
Right.
And that's what these chickens are. You know, in my case, you know, it's Swedish, English,
like
French, whatever.
Said, well,
and it's their case. It's Micronesia,
they say, well, like,
Oceania.
You know, they said, is it a kiri-kiri? You know, well, what does it look like? And it's like, well, anything that was taken from any chickens that were collected off of South Cape, or Cape South, I guess it's called, were often called kiri-kiri because that's the name of a village or a large port or something that was on mm-hmm. Cape South. So, mm-hmm. and, you know, the little tiny chickens that, there's these stone houses called moas, and Moa Tarahari or something like that. And so they're these stone houses, and they're quite dramatic to see in person. They're huge, and they're the largest structures on the island because the only animals that they had on the entire island were chickens.
Wow.
And,
that's interesting.
Yeah, not even a lizard.
Wow, not even a lizard.
Rat.
Jeez.
Well, I imagine when the chickens got there, they ate the lizards, but...
Right, right. And so they you know,
yeah.
any of the birds that survived in these big stone houses were tiny, and they, you know, these little tiny kirikiris, they cling to rocks. You can keep them in a shoebox. They're so, you know, they're just so... They're like having a swift or something, you know what I mean? They really like to be elevated and in a cranny. You know, they're not like a chicken that wants to be on the ground or out in the garden. You know, they're just not like that. So, but, you know, there are any number of small little bantam-like things that ended up being called kiri-kiri. And then I know that one gentleman bred a Pacific jungle fowl into one line, and another gentleman bred reriku, which are another kind of unusual chicken from Easter Island, to another line. So there's, you know, there's several different kinds of chickens from Easter Island, and they're not all composites. In fact, some of them have been really closely bred and are very, you know, very, you know, you can get one or two different morphs and that's it out of them. But really, mm-hmm. they're not a breed that you know, you're ever going to get more than two birds out of a clutch that look alike. You know what I mean? They're
yeah.
Not,
uh-huh.
But there's only three or four morphs, though, so it isn't like you're uh-huh. going to get something brand new.
Uh-huh.
You're going to get this one, or this one. And if you're really lucky, you'll get one that's like black with black skin or iridescent and white.
You know, yeah, I was going to ask you, how common are those? Are those like a rare, really rare to get a black
yeah,
one?
Yeah, they're really rare, and you can breed for it, though. And so some of them that I got were already well-bred to be black-boned, and I'm really this gentleman Iwamiya was very interested in black-boned birds, so he collected black-boned chickens from every part of the world because he was so fascinated with it. So these were some that he had, you know, kept and select bred. But my favorite are birds that are hatched out of some of the Easter Island chickens and also some of the South American chickens that are white, but they're iridescent like a candle.
Oh,
and I have to say that I have a real weakness.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow, that's different. So you're still breeding these chickens yourself, right? You know,
the farms do, and you know what I do is when I swing through, I'll grab up birds and put them into holding enclosures where it's just those few birds and that founder group, and then those eggs will either be hatched by the parents, which is my preference,
mm-hmm.
Or the eggs will be shipped to somebody else, or just hatched for the farm.
Mm-hmm.
And then the hatcheries, they actually sell hatching eggs. So that's that's my preference, is that people who are stewards of rare birds, that they, you know, sell hatching eggs, because it's cheap, it's safe, and I don't know. It's just something cool about it. If you know how to ship an egg, it's special.
Yeah.
And that way you, as a writer, don't have to deal with the general public. The hatcheries can do.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
Deal with them. My mother was a writer, and I know what it is to be around a writer when they're close to deadline. You just talk quickly and duck.
Yeah, I'm such a
bad word. And speaking of ducks, so chickens were it. There weren't ducks or geese or any other, just the little tiny chickens.
Yeah, well, they were also big chickens. They had something like 15 different kinds of chickens. They didn't just have the little ones. They had ones that were giant, like 3 foot tall, fighting chickens.
All the Malays, like the Malay type chickens?
Yes, with naked necks that evidently they had feathers one part of the year, and then they would have a naked neck the rest, and they had like a parasol on their head.
Cool. You know, I'm gonna interrupt you right here, Kermit. This is Joe's favorite thing that I do, is I say, we are out of time for this segment.
Oh, no.
But we'll be right back with more of Country Joe's Chicken Show here on All Paws Pet Talk Radio.
Treat your furry best friend with a clear conscience. Clear Conscience Pet, that is. Everything made by this family-owned company is artisan-crafted in the USA. From family-farmed ingredient sources, holistically formulated for your pet's best health. And just plain delicious. Their treats, chews, and the amazing super gravy food topper for dogs and cats are simply the best you can buy. And the company has won 5 National Nutrition Awards to prove it. Now, Clear Conscience Pet is launching the Sliders brand, a true breakthrough in meaty treats featuring the purest tender meat treat ever made. No grain, no gluten, no glycerin or other chemicals found in typical moist treats. Sliders are pub fun snacks made from lean meats, nutritionally optimized with omega-rich organic flax and veggies. Enter the offer code RADIO at checkout and save 20% at clearconsciencepet.com. Your pets will love you for it.
Dog a finicky eater due to health problems, old age, or just fussiness? Super Gravy by Clear Conscience Pet will boost your pet's appetite and nutrition for less than 40 cents a day. If you are adding expensive canned food to kibble to get your pet to eat, Super Gravy is the earth-friendly alternative with no can waste and for less than half the cost. Visit supergravy.com for more info and bring pure joy back to your companion's mealtime. Now through Labor Day, save 20% on Super Gravy and all Clear Conscience Pet treats at Pet Food Warehouse in South Burlington and Shelburne.
I'm hungry, lick the plate. I'm hungry, tastes great. I love food. I'm hungry, can't wait. I'm hungry, lick the plate. I'm hungry, tastes great. I love food.
She said, rearrange my family tree. A chicken is what I want to be.
Welcome back to All Paws Pet Talk to Country Joe's Chicken Show here, and we are talking about the chickens of Easter Island, the Rapa Nui chickens. Now, Kermit, you were telling us there are like 15 different kinds?
Yeah, there were. I mean, you know, you can see they had words for them in their dictionary, so we know that there were these different ones, and they're all very descriptive, so they tell you what it looked like. And then based on other chickens like in Tonga and Samoa, you know, you have a good idea that the Austronesians were present. And those are the giant chickens like the Malay and the Saipan and the Malagasy.
Yep.
That's a really important group of birds that are really underappreciated because people associate them with violence or whatever. But, you know, the chicken's history is, you know, the first three quarters of its history were just fighting. And these giant games. I don't even believe that they're bred from the same stock as regular chickens, but I won't get into that. But
no, I don't think so. They come from jungle fowl, you know.
Yeah, and I think that they came from a jungle fowl that no one's described.
Yeah.
You know, I think that they're an island, that they descended of an island species that may have been very closely related to the red jungle fowl, but it was a giant flightless creature that, you know, had no fear of people and is just violently mean. Mm-hmm. But anyway.
Now, are there any chickens currently on Easter Island? Is there anything there?
There are. I've been there twice. And actually, I saw chickens that certainly had Rapa Nui in them. I didn't get up all the way into some of the marshes because that's where the wild chickens lived. Like the Raraku is like a real jungle fowl. And they lived in the reeds. And so they were the last ones to survive. Now, when I was there the first time, all I saw were big, stupid domestic chickens. But I went on a horse ride and went way up into some areas and saw some feral chickens that, you know, they were feral chickens. They weren't super exciting. But I could certainly see by the way they moved and even their voices that they weren't your typical, even your Hawaiian, you know, jungle fowl. They were unique. But, you know, plenty of domestic chicken in them. But then the second time I went to Easter Island, I was very happy to see a bunch of birds way up on the northwestern side. It's so confusing because it's south from here.
Yep.
So it's the northwestern side of the country. South. Gosh, it's south and west. Anyway, I saw a bunch of birds there that certainly were Rapa Nui, but again with domestic chickens, but they had a lot more Rapa Nui traits. And something I'm planning on doing in the next few years is figuring out how to export eggs from these stocks back to Easter Island and to Chile. It's something that, you know, I started doing. I'm producing a film on chickens, and I thought we might do that in that program, but it just turned out to be a huge bureaucracy that didn't work with making the documentary. So
now, is Easter Island part of Chile now?
Yes, Chile owns it. Yeah, they have for a long time.
So, are you writing a book about Rapa Nui, or is there a book just on these chickens?
No, there isn't. There's a book called Pacific Jungle Fowl, which is an important read, and there's another one called When the Blue Egg Chickens Come Home to Roost, or something like that. Those are two good articles. And then there's a lot of articles in Japanese and a lot of articles in, when I say a lot, maybe two to five, you know, more than one. And then there are a bunch in Chilean Spanish.
Nobody's then, converted know, this over into English for us.
Right.
Yeah.
You have to get somebody to translate. And frankly, when you're dealing with indigenous people, they don't necessarily have the abstraction of describing a chicken. You know, they go into a market and they pick a bird that they like and they bring it home.
They're not really saying that's an Araucana jungle fowl mix. That's my preferred breed.
No. Yeah.
But if you get on Facebook, you know, there are groups of South Americans who have great Facebook groups, and they're all going into like the most remote places in Chile and Peru collecting chickens, and you'll be fascinated to see how unusual they are. And they clearly are of the Polynesian Easter Island types. You know, they're very unique. And it's, you know, what's really interesting to think about, too, is it's very possible that domestication of those chickens took place on the island.
Wow.
You know, that they created those breeds. Not all of them, but you know what I mean? That they, a lot of the diversity of the birds came about through random mutation, and then they were select bred by a bunch of incredibly bored people living on an island so far away from anything that that's all they did.
Yeah.
Right. That was their interesting thing to do when once all the palm trees were gone.
God.
And there, you know,
maybe debates about whose woodpile that was.
Yeah.
Where did that afro come from on that banny? It wasn't mine.
Now, are the blue and green eggs, are those descended from?
I believe so. I do. I think that they originated on Easter Island, and those birds arrived in South America at some point. I don't know if they came with the slaves from Easter Island that came to South America, or if they had already arrived. I don't see why they couldn't have already arrived. I mean, I don't understand what the big thing is. They got all the way to Easter Island, for God's sake.
Right.
But and obviously the sweet potato got to them.
So, wow.
Right, the sweet potatoes from South America. Matter of fact, like half of the plants that the Polynesians grew were from South America. So,
right. Mm-hmm. So we know, even if nobody officially says it, that there was there was commerce back and forth before there
the
was
new
officially.
World, it's kind of hard to discover a continent with 20-some million people on it.
Yeah.
And I think one day our fantasy will end.
Yeah.
But anyway, what was the question?
Is that where the blue egg chickens come
from? The blue
from?
Eggs. Yes, I believe, and I don't have science to back this up, mm-hmm. but the green jungle fowl is the only jungle fowl species that lays a tinted egg. You'll see on some of the smaller islands and on places like Timor and Flores, where there's a strange mineral, there's different volcanic minerals in the soil than there are in other islands, that the eggs are more tinted. So I think, mm-hmm. There's some reaction to, like, say, copper or something. And they're not blue. They're just slightly yellow or slightly gray with the green jungle fowl. Nothing blue. But then you get out to an island covered in seabirds. A foreign creature comes to live there. The seabirds are bored and they're hungry. They're eating each other's eggs. They have very camouflaged eggs. All the seabirds do.
Right.
An egg that doesn't match the substrate is going to get eaten right away by people and or seabirds. So I think that eggs that happen to be slightly tinted also happen to look more like stones or look more like the sky.
Mm-hmm.
And so seabirds don't see those colors, and so they overlook them. And I also think that there's a virus, a very common virus in birds, but it's more common in seabirds than ground birds from the forest. And something tells me that the birds on these islands, it's kind of like getting immune to chicken pox or something like that, where the birds that survived on those islands were also completely immune to this particular virus. I forgot what it's called. It's like E something. And the blue egg chickens are known to carry that, as are some of the jungle fowl. But the green jungle fowl in the study didn't. But they didn't study green jungle fowl from Lesser Sundas. They studied green jungle fowl from Java. So maybe they have not come into contact with that because they're still on a jungle island. I don't know,
right.
But the blue egg is fascinating.
It is fascinating, but we are running out of time for this week's show.
Oh,
okay.
Joe hates when
really
I do this to him, but
we'll have to do this again.
Yeah, yeah, definitely, because I got a lot more questions for you.
Okay.
I didn't get to ask, so we're going to have you back on here.
Sure.
Okay.
Anytime.
That'll be great. We'll let you get back to your writing now. I know your publicist said, well, he's on a deadline, so we'll let you get back to that. I want to thank you so much for being with us today.
It was a lot of fun. Thank you so much. I needed this. I needed a break.
Oh,
that's right. And Joe, will you say it with me?
Yeah. Are you ready? May the
All right. One,
you.
Two, three.
May the flock
be with you.
There we go.